Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us on this very hot day here in the state of Maryland. If you're listening to us from someplace else, we have 90-degree weather here, 95, 96-degree weather. Summer's coming. It is Maryland. That's what happens. Maryland also has coming a gubernatorial election coming up in 2014. We've been interviewing a number of candidates. This is our first conversation with one of the leading Republican people who can run for the Republican nomination for governor. That's Harford County Executive David Craig. And David, welcome. Good to have you in WEA Studios.
Good morning. It's good to be here, especially since I graduated from Morgan State.
So. That's right. I forgot about
this. Except this building didn't exist then. It's a very beautiful building. I can see where I went. I can see my classrooms over there, but beautiful.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages and leave your comments. I'll check those in a minute. Our tweet, at Mark Steiner. But David Craig's in the studio, Morgan State grad, Republican, running for governor. 410-319-8888. So, of course, the question to anybody in the Republican Party is, in the state of Maryland, why are you running for governor, given how it's very tough to do in such a Democratic-bound state? Well, what do you bring to the table that would change folks' minds?
If you look at my background, it's a diverse background, but I was a teacher and administrator in public schools for 34 years.
In Harford County.
I'm born in Maryland, 10th generation. Generations 11 and 12 are still here. I want to make sure they stay here. I want the grandchildren living here. But if you look at the political background, a lot of experience as an executive, as mayor of Havre de Grace for 9 years, and I will have been county executive for almost 10 years. By the time
you're not term limited,
we are term limited.
But three terms?
No, we're term limited at two and a half.
You're term limited to two and a half.
And I got two and a half. My predecessor, Jim Harkins, and I are good friends, and Jim was appointed by Bob Ehrlich to move to MES, and I was
right.
I was mayor at Havre de Grace at the time.
Right.
Put my name in, got appointed.
Ah, that's your half.
Yeah, that's my half.
Right.
And it was rather unexpected because it happened rather suddenly. And so I have almost 18, 19 years of experience on the executive side. And I think that's what we offer to the people of Maryland, that we can offer something that we understand how to balance a budget and how to have a vision and make that vision work.
Well, let's talk about what that vision is. I mean, let's talk about some immediate issues that face the state and how you would address them. We've talked to everybody about all these things so far. Let's just talk one of the hot button issues at the moment. One of the hot button issues has to do with the state prison system,
mm-hmm.
and in our county systems as well. There are a lot of issues here that some people would argue that nobody is talking about them. Everybody's missing the mark. That what's the nature of the problem inside of our prisons? Is it A, that we are locking up too many people and need to lock up less people in the state of Maryland, put less people away in prison, most of them there for nonviolent crimes? That there's no way to manage these prisons, some people would argue, given the size of the prisons in terms of who's the numbers of people incarcerated. So I'm curious what your approach would be, because nobody has been able to turn that nor our juvenile justice system around in the 20 years that I've been covering these on the air here.
Well, I could talk about either of those problems, a juvenile problem, since I was an assistant principal and I had to deal with children before. I could usually tell when someone was 11, 12, or 13, that eventually I might see their name in the newspaper as a person being arrested for something if we didn't do the right things as we work with them as children and with their parents. A lot of it has to do with their parents and backgrounds and things like that. But let's go to the correctional facilities. When you're an elected official, particularly when you're a mayor, county executive, or governor, you have a lot of issues that get put on your table. And some people always want certain issues to be the number one priority, but you have to understand that it's just like if you have multiple children. We have three children. You can't just always deal with one child. You deal with all of them, and you have to deal with them in different ways. And the correctional issue is not one that's out there all the time. So if you just let that continue to get in a bad situation, then it is going to be really – it's not going to work, and you have to pay attention to it. We have a correctional facility in Harford County, and it does fall under the sheriff's office. But the sheriff and I, Jesse Bain, work very well on what we need to do to make sure that it works as well as possible. And the correctional employees often get treated almost like they're the adopted children that, they just sort of, we don't have to deal with you. We don't see you on a regular basis. And I have open-door meetings with the officers from that facility as many times as possible to see what it is can we do to help you guys and gals do a good job, bring in good people to work with you. So it is always about the people that are working there. I think it comes down to that, and then it comes down to who's in charge.
But do we lock up too many people in the state of Maryland? Are there too many people arrested for marijuana, for drugs, nonviolent crime, serving time in our prisons? We can do maybe do things other than that, other than incarcerating everybody who commits a nonviolent crime or is arrested for drug use in the state of Maryland.
Well, and if you look at our correctional facility, a large number of those people are, as you say, drug-related. And it might be selling, it might be being found with it. It's probably about 70% in our correctional facility, which usually has between 400 and 450 people in it on an average on a day. We're a little bit different than the state in that all those people are in there for less than 3 years. So we know they're going to go out. Now, do we arrest too many people? I can't say that we arrest too many people and how they get prosecuted. I do think there are some weaknesses that we have when they're in prison and when they're getting ready to get out, that we're not doing a good enough job helping those people change their life as they move out. And because usually they don't even know until today. If they were in prison, they're getting out today, they know today they're getting out. Well, we need to do things to help them. All right, you're getting out, and we're going to give you advice. We're going to help you locate where we don't want you to go back where you were and do the things that you were doing before. We want to help get you ready to get a job somewhere. Work with some of your local companies to encourage them to hire these people. Give them a job. Let's try to change their life a little bit so that they go away. And because if we just let them go back to where they were, they're going to end up coming back to us. And we need to do a better job on that.
So the answer, to move on to another subject, but so the job is you don't think too many people are being arrested in the state of Maryland.
I can't.
Being too many people in the state. Too many people of color being locked up for what many people would argue should be community corrections and not incarceration.
Well, it's when they get arrested, that's one thing. Then it comes down to your state's attorney and to the judicial system, how they're going to handle what they're going to do with those people. And, unless you actually know that a person's first time they've been arrested, are they going to jail? Probably not. Most likely there's been some sort of negotiation with them to try to encourage. We have several programs like that in Harford County, particularly with younger people, that we try to do programs for them first before they end up going to jail. Usually if they end up going to jail, it's because they've been in the courtroom several times doing the same thing, and we don't see anything better getting on with what they're doing.
So let me move on. There are a number of issues that also that people are wrestling with in the state, and there are always arguments about taxes, no taxes in the state of Maryland, or less taxes.
There are taxes.
There are less taxes.
And it's very taxing.
It is very taxing. But when people talk about cutting taxes or not instituting the taxes that were, say, instituted in the last session in the General Assembly, how do you pay for the things that the state of Maryland is supposed to do if you don't have taxes? Where does that revenue come from?
Well, the one thing you need to do, one of the things you need to do when you're in office is you need to look at, do we really need to spend the money in the first place? Can we be more efficient in what we do? I'll just give you some examples. In Harford County, at one point, I realized that we had almost 900 printers. What did we need all them for? We had so many vehicles. We had so many things we were spending money on that we could have, and we did reduce the size of our budget. We reduced the size of our side of government, not education, not public safety. But there are many things you can do to be more efficient. So check first and make sure you need the money before you decide you're going to spend it, before you're going to take it from someone. And then, you look at the different taxes. The other thing is, rather than taking more taxes from the same number of people or the same number of people with the same income, it's better. It's like I use the analogy like eating a bigger piece of pie. It's better to have a bigger pie instead of an 8-inch pie, have a 9-inch pie. That way everybody else gets a little bit more too. So if you grow your economy, and I can go back to President Coolidge. President Coolidge reduced income tax from 70% to 25%, and he doubled the amount of income that was coming, income tax that was coming in, because he was able to encourage new jobs and the economy grew and things like that. So it's better to have more people and take just the same amount of money from them rather than have less people and take more money from them. So you have to take as little money out as you can, be as efficient as you can in how you spend it.
So if you were sitting as governor now, where would you have stood on the money for Baltimore City Schools to construction? Would you have been yay or nay? Would you have said, I'll sign it, I'll veto it? What would you have done if you were there?
Well, I can tell you, as the Harford County executive, I spent a third of $1 billion on school construction. I'm very much into, as an educator, And infrastructure in general, not just schools, but all infrastructure. You need to look at all your infrastructure and know when it's going to need to be replaced, just like your house at home. If you don't keep track of the of how you can keep it up to date, at some point it's going to cost you so much more to replace it, then what are you going to do, tear it down and start all over again? The only thing I would say is I believe that they need to do a really good efficiency study on how many schools they have, how many do we just need to shut it down, tear it down, start all over again. And that is actually what we did in Harford County. Instead of just building new schools for increased population, Bel Air High School, we had Edgewood High School, we built a brand new school and then tore the old one down. Now, it did save us money on and energy efficiency, made them better technology in the buildings and things like that. So sometimes it's better to start all over again and instead of renovating. So I think that they have about 200 schools in Baltimore City, and they probably only need about 120 with the number of students that they have. So I think they need to do a real good efficiency study before you spend money on something.
You think they did that already?
I'm not convinced that they actually know all of what that is. I would severely doubt that they look at all of it all at the same time.
And so you think that there was a mistake for the $1.5 billion for construction?
I don't think it was a mistake. It's just when you start spending it, make sure you know that when you spend it, you're spending it on the first schools that need to be done, too. Let's make it a priority list so that you know, high schools are important, middle schools are important, elementary schools are important. I can tell you lots of times as a middle school administrator, we get forgotten. So you really need to keep track of where it is. Now, there's also a political side to it. I know when I'm building things in Harford County, I can't build them all in the same district. You have to have it spread out. You know, you have to make sure you're treating everybody pretty much the same. And it is important to look about, how old is this building? What's the population of that school population? Would it be better to either tear it down and build a smaller school? Would it be better to, combine two schools together? Those are the types of things that are needed. I can anticipate that $1 billion in Baltimore City is probably still a little short, because if I spent a third of $1 billion and they're three,
it's $1.5 billion short, according to what people said in Baltimore City at any rate.
Now I would say, do you really need a red line in Baltimore City? Would it be better? Would you rather spend the money on new schools and spend the money on a red line that a lot of people don't want? let's look at your infrastructure. The other thing you have to look is when you build things. There's a lot of infrastructure problems that we had where if I build a new school in a certain place, then I need to do road construction in that place, or I need to do water and sewer repairs in that place. So it's not just the building that's going to be above the ground. It's what's below the ground you have to look at, too. So you need a combination of things like that. It's unfortunate in Baltimore every once in a while you see people that now live on the waterfront when there's a water break on a street line and it floods out. But you have to be accurate on what you're doing.
So I just got a note from my wife here. I said the wrong thing. She always corrects my grammar since my father passed away. She said, I should say fewer people, not less people. You're right. I'm sorry. So the number here is 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Join in on this conversation with David Craig, Harford County Executive, running for governor. Well, we think he's running for governor on the Republican Party. For seeking that nomination, 410-319-8888 is the number. Want to hear your thoughts? Join us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I know you have questions for him. Here they go. We'll get to these questions. Some of the other issues that came up. Education's a big one. Education funding's a big issue. The other things that hit the social fan. So the social issues that came up. And I'm curious we don't know where you stand on these issues. I think people like to know whether it's things like the death penalty. If you were governor, we said, no, I veto this. I don't, or yes, I sign it, I agree, we should end the death penalty. That's a huge thing for people in the state of Maryland. Maybe a referendum coming up if enough signatures are found. The same with whether we pass gay marriage in the state legislature. Those were two major kind of social issues that hit. I'd be curious what you would have done had you been governor.
As the county executive, I rarely veto legislation because there is a separation between the executive branch and the legislative branch and legislation coming out of them. You have to be cautious. You can't say, when a bill first comes out, I'm going to veto that as soon as it comes out, because often bills change when the legislature's done with it. It's completely different. On the issue of the gay marriage, traditional marriage, I think it's important that the people of Maryland spoke on that and were allowed to to vote, and it went to them, and they made the decision. And it's not up to one or 188 people in government to change the voice of the people of the state. If that's what the people of the state said, then that's what the people want. It'd be interesting to see how they come out on the death penalty. It would have been better to get rid of the death tax than the death penalty, because we have so many people that leave the state because they want their children and other people to inherit their money, and they don't want to get taxed again. Would have been much better to do that. We have to be cautious about how we handle that issue, because I hear from state's attorneys and the people that do the prosecutions that at least if they had the death penalty on the paper, that they could go and say, all right, we want to negotiate with you on what you're going to testify to about what you did and why you did it. But if that's taken away, then they feel it ruins their ability to negotiate with someone who committed a rather serious crime.
I know that your state's attorney, who's been on the show many times, Joel Cassidy, has that opinion.
Right. Most of them do, I think.
a lot of them do. I mean, Prince George's kind of doesn't. Montgomery County doesn't. Baltimore City, but many do. Yeah. When you look at other issues, I'm curious. Well, before you get another issue, let me ask another question. Do you know when you're going to announce?
We'll call you on Monday.
Okay, there you go. So by Monday, we'll know that you're running for
president. Unless you want to come to my house at 9 o'clock on Monday morning.
I'll be on the air.
Well, okay, that's true. You will be. All right. We'll be walking out on the porch, my wife and our children and I, and we'll be making our official announcement about what we're planning on doing.
And as I've asked everybody else, any thoughts on who would be your lieutenant governor candidate who would run with
you? I give serious thoughts to that. It's a little bit different when you're the mayor. You don't have a vice mayor, and when you're the county executive,
you don't have a
lieutenant county executive. But I think the main thing is to make sure that whoever you choose to or ask to join your team, that they can actually do your job, that they actually be the governor if something happens to you or whatever it is. That's more important than trying to work on demographics on where they live or their experience in other things or how much money they can bring to your campaign, those types of things. You really want to look at somebody who has some experience on executive and governmental issues. And do you have to agree with them on 100% of the issues? No. My wife and I don't agree on 100% of the issues. She wins every time and we talk about it. You just, got corrected too. I know what that's like. So it's important to choose someone who is well representative and has experience and can actually do the job. That's the key. It's not, are they going to help you win the election? Because they will. If they have that ability, they will help you win the election.
What is it you think that you will bring to the table? I've asked other people this question as well. I asked Anthony Brown this question. I asked Omen this question, Mazir this question when they were on the show. Let's say we're broadcasting out from the Baltimore area. But even though our signal goes, large signal, goes to D.C. and Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, who can't vote for you. What do you say to the people of Baltimore City, of Baltimore County, suburban regions, why they should switch gears and vote for David Craig, vote for a Republican candidate, which is something that most people, at least in the metropolitan areas, don't do?
Well, one thing, I love Baltimore. Come here all the time. Had relatives that lived here for a long time. Big Oriole fan, big Ravens fan. And having been mayor, I understand some of the problems that the mayors of Baltimore have experienced and know how to work with them to help them resolve those issues. That is a huge difference than any of the other candidates that are out there. That if you really, you can say I'm going to help Baltimore, but if you don't know Baltimore well personally and if you don't understand the mayor's job and how you can help them resolve their issues, you really can't help them.
So how would that be? Let me give you an example of some of the things we've talked about in the show recently. One of those things is that the money coming, we just talked about, to build the new schools in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. There's a huge debate going on around here right now over who controls how that money is going to be spent. Right now, the Maryland Stadium Authority controls that money, which means it could go to contractors in Houston or mm-hmm. San Francisco and would not affect people in Baltimore at all. And people in Baltimore are saying, look, we need jobs. Mm-hmm. We have skilled people who don't have jobs, and we need people to get the training so they can have the skills to get those jobs. But there's no control because the state has that control.
I believe it should be at the local government. They're the ones that know what's going on. So either the county or the municipality. So in Baltimore's case, they're both. But I believe that more of that needs to move to the local person that's going to be in charge of it and not keep it at the statewide level. I don't want the state telling me how I'm supposed to do it as the county executive. I'm sure Ken Ullman doesn't want them doing that in Howard County. And we would both agree with Stephanie Rawlings-Blake that she should have a lot more control over how that's spent and where it goes and what happens with it. It's just that that's your economy.
So finally, there's we've argued a bunch of things on this show before. We have about 4 minutes left, but one is and I'll let you finish with a quick thought on this and how you want to finish. But the Ag Certainty Bill that came up, the whole question of the pesticide bill that did not get through, that's going to come in the next legislative session. There's going to be a huge debate there in the next couple of sessions, and whether or not in your county, like suburban homeowners and farmers, should be required to say what's on their lawn and where, so people can figure out where it goes. There's a big argument around that. I'm curious your stance on that and let you close out any way you like.
Well, I think we overregulate many things like that don't need to be overregulated. And I had some issues with lately with when they wanted to put that little bottle tax on there to say we want to collect 5 cents for every soft drink bottle you have. Harford County, we're already number two in the state when it comes to those types of issues. So we can handle those issues. Had the issue with the rain tax that there really wasn't any plan on from the state side saying, all right, how are we going to solve these problems if these are real problems? But we're going to make you collect money and we're going to make you try to solve the problem, but we really don't have a solution to the problem. So there are a lot of issues like that come out that don't really need to be done, I believe. And the one that you just mentioned on lawns,
yeah,
I think it's just overregulation. Because the company that's going to put, I tell you, farmers aren't going to waste money. They're pretty, fiduciarily responsible. They're pragmatic. They're not going to spend money on their property that's not going to be effective in what it needs to do to help them. So best management practices have been going on for 20 years, and most of them are getting there. And the best way to encourage ones who aren't getting there is to have other farmers work with them to get that done, not statewide issues to do that. I think another thing I bring that a true choice to people for the state of Maryland about experience. Most of the other people that are running are lawyers. I'm a teacher. They practice after they go to college and then they practice law. I practiced when I was in college and then actually taught. So we actually do our job after we get out of college. But I understand education. And if education's your number one priority, which many people have, I think we understand the issues that have been changing in education a great deal. But we bring a true choice to people. And people in Maryland, I know that often they say, oh, they're only going to vote Democratic. If they have a true choice, they do often vote for someone else in the other party, in the Republican Party, if they think that they have a good message and a good vision of what they want to do.
David Craig, Harford County Executive, for 2.5 terms, now running to become, we think he's running, but I'm sure he's running, to become the next governor of the state of Maryland to get that Republican nomination. David Craig, great to see you.
Good to be here.
Thanks so much for being in the studio.
Quite all right.
Good to have you
beautiful
here.
Studio.
Thank you very much. And we look forward to having you back.
We will be back.
Down the campaign trail.
All right.
It'll be good to have you here. And do some debates here in the air and get this.
We can do that.
We'll do all that. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Janae Desmond-Harris as we look at what is new with the George Zimmerman trial, Trayvon Martin, and then have a national roundtable on the news coming up after that. Look at some local issues like the World Farm Store in Hamilton after that. And take a journey into the culture and world of the Maroons in Jamaica. Stay with us.